The Monday Morning Tech Chat Show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is, of course, the premier audiobook service, perfect for folks who want their books read to them. Thousands and thousands of titles to choose from in all genres, sci-fi, fantasy, biographies, history, thrillers, mysteries, and more. We've got a great offer for listeners on this podcast, 2 free audiobooks when you sign up. And those books are yours to keep even if you decide to cancel your Audible subscription, which is $14.95 a month and gives you a free book every month of your choosing, as well as some other fun perks. Membership has its privileges. Hit up bit.ly/geekbookclub to start your free trial and get those 2 free books on lock. Once again, bit.ly/geekbookclub. And now, let's get into the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. If you're watching this live, we're going a little early this week. We're going an hour early this week because my show typically goes for around 2 hours, and that would put us right into WWDC territory. It's not that hard to figure out. It's math. You know, if you move an hour and then you go 2 hours and then WWDC happens, that's why we're doing this now. If you're listening to this as the streaming podcast after that, you don't need to know any of that. You're just going to listen to this show the same way that you've always listened to this show. I am Juan Carlos Bagnell, your rambling host for the next couple hours of podcasting, also known as Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly, awfully named podcast series. And the QA, of course, stands for question and answer, which I'm really happy to see we've got a decent live chat already starting up, even though we're going early. I know that throws people, but it's how we do. I have to watch the WWDC keynote. That's a thing. So I like to make this an interactive conversation, a discussion about some of the top tech news stories of the last week. This one's going to be a little funny because I think the top tech news story of this week is going to be Apple. But we're gonna soldier on, and we're gonna follow up on a couple stories that we've been covering, especially in terms of mergers and wireless content. And then we also just have a real sexy phone to talk about, because in the gadget lab, I've been playing with the LG Velvet for the weekend, and I got one of those really fancy reviewer kits, which I was really very honored to be one of 15 people around the world that picked up an early LG Velvet. And a very fancy and a very special case and box with some accessories and stuff. So we're going to talk about that too. And yeah, we've got a lot. So first of all, just those of you who maybe over the weekend were celebrating, I hope you had a happy Father's Day. Marie and Lex planned a whole bunch of special little activities. You know, we had a waffle bar on Saturday and got my favorite deep dish pizza, and then we hung out yesterday at Descanso Gardens, and I just got to spend the morning taking photos of flowers. You know, it's like my Zen hobby is flower macro photography. So that it was a lovely weekend, and so hopefully, like I say, for any of these holidays where we might be a little cynical, or we might lose sight of what the day represents, and then just kind of rush and get really anxious about buying gifts. I hope that you were able to spend some time with people you care about, and I hope you were able to do that while eating some good food. So happy day after Father's Day, and I hope it was a happy day. Chatty boy, happy belated Father's Day, Juan. Thank you. I appreciate that. All right, who do we got? We got Webster RC. He's here. We got Charlie Spirit Song. We got Root Knight. We've got ER 1980. We've got Walt. Hey, Walt. Thanks for jumping in. We've got Alice Bockley. We've got Vazicose 8. I think we've got a crew here. JT Moat, right from the very beginning. All right. We got a crew. Hakey, I'm a couple of minutes late, but I made it. Hakey, you're never late once you get here. Once you get here, that is the time that you were supposed to be here. Let's knock out this news block. Give ourselves just a little bit of a window. I mean, this show could be our pre-show for WWDC. But I'm not going to spend this whole time trying to do Apple predictions. The keynote is in 2 hours, so we'll just talk about some other stuff. We'll let Apple speak for themselves, but we do have one Apple story just talking about processors and what I think is a very exciting development for the world of computers and mobile electronics. So we should probably kick this off, as we always do, with some housekeeping. And last week was nuts. Last week was a proper busy week. And I've got another week lining right up to cover a ton of stuff. Finally chewing up some reviews and some videos. So let's kick over into a screen share. Charlie Spirit song saying 13 minutes. Note, Juan has been hitting 7 minutes for 3 weeks consistently. Someone clue in Matt Tyler while we're going early. All right. Let me go into screen share here. It is 8:05 in the AM. Starting off, A number one, Apple sued for games with loot boxes in the App Store. Google should be next. This is a quick editorial video I put together. It's a topic that is near and dear to my heart. I feel games and ratings have a lot of issues, and we need to be doing a better job of preparing consumers and parents and children alike for what actually happens in a game. So this was actually going to be a topic on last week's podcast. I couldn't fit it into the show, and so I decided to make it its own standalone video. I hope that gets a little conversation going, because I feel like there are ways, even if you want to include gambling mechanics in games, I feel like there are ways that we could be doing this in a way that is sort of age appropriate. From Alice Bockley, we need regulating in this field. Yeah. And Charlie Spirit's on going after the stores is a good move. I completely agree. Follow the money. All right, moving right along. Okay, Google, I'm getting pulled over. How to automatically record an interaction with police. Someone put together a really great tutorial on Reddit, just sort of listing some of the steps that they did to create a routine. So there's like this, it's not a standalone app, but it's like a plugin that you can use with Siri that automates a whole bunch of things when you activate Siri and you say a key phrase like, I'm getting pulled over. And so someone tried to recreate that with Google Assistant, and I think it's a really handy guide. Outside of just the political turmoil of what's been going on with different communities in the United States, I really wish more people were taking advantage of macros and routines. Bixby is amazing for setting up macros. I mean, a really easy like plug and play guide for kicking this stuff over, especially for people who are intimidated by apps like Tasker. Google Assistant is getting a lot better at setting up one command and then a whole list of actions that follow through after that command. It's pretty fun stuff. And it's also kind of fun because it's kind of like an intro to programming. It's a logic statement. When I say this, then you do, these actions. And it kind of helps you think a little like a programmer. And then it's a huge benefit when you're just on the go trying to knock out, a whole bunch of things, especially for actions that you do very, very frequently, very repetitively. Moving right along. I've been on a more regular schedule for dual podcasts. So not only the Monday morning tech news show, but also Creator Chat. And we had our second return appearance, episode 157, Adam Dowd from the Benefit of the Dowd podcast. We had a great conversation talking about the world and the art and the lifestyle of podcasting. And one of the things that's actually been really interesting to watch is how many conversations are just getting a bit more candid about some of the behind-the-scenes work that goes into the content you consume. And I'm really happy to see that. I feel for too long, we've been putting out this like polished presentation, and the viewers don't know like just how much effort goes into making that thing. So Adam, on his first appearance, was talking up Android Authority podcast and Digit Daily and the Sound Guys, and all of those shows got pulled. All of those shows got canceled, and he had to share. I mean, I'm like trying to condense this conversation and sum up what Adam talked about. Listen to the conversation, because he goes into detail about what it was like going out on his own to start up his own new show. When you're starting a new piece of media like that and you don't have the backup of a larger organization, monetizing, distributing, advertising, all of these things get much, much more difficult. So hopefully you you folks give it a listen, because you know, supporting your local content creator has never been more important. A major video, but not quite the end of a discussion, just the beginning of a discussion. If you've been watching or listening to this podcast or following my other commentary, you would know I've had to send back my early review unit, Sony Xperia 1 Mark II, and I'm very sad about that. But I did have enough B-roll cobbled together to start the review video process. Xperia 1 Mark II review, not quite the full review. So this is the beginnings of the conversation. This is like a couple weeks of use. This isn't, you know, full network testing and all of the battery testing. But between this video and my Buy the Benchmark series, I think you can get a pretty good look at what a Sony has to offer and what makes it different than, you know, an iPhone or a Galaxy or an LG or a Motorola or a Pixel. Sony is making probably the boldest statement of the year when it comes to a phone, you know, especially nailing down what the demographic is. And I just love Sony for their unapologetic consumer electronics stance. It's like you can pick up a Sony product and you just get the sense that Sony engineers are telling you that they know better than you what a good gadget should be. And as long as you buy a Sony, then you'll know that you're getting the correct gadget. I like the word unapologetic for Sony hardware. And lastly, rounding all this up, we're going to be talking about the LG Velvet and the Gadget Blog second half of this podcast. But I got a very special box from LG PR. And for some reason, my link is trying to show me my Xperia review. Hold on. One more time. I got a very special box from... there we go. So I did an unboxing. I don't do a lot of unboxings. Unboxings really aren't my thing. I feel like taking a product out of a box is really cynical unless you're excited about something. Just taking a phone out of a box to me is not entertaining content. I don't think it's engaging. I don't have fun with it. We talk about passions, right? When you're a tech reviewer, that just becomes a part of the job. That becomes a part of the grind. Like, I've got to set this phone up and I've got to do this and I've got to do that and I've got to get these things installed. The fact that LG is actually trying to set up to make that introduction to a new product something special and is showing off some consideration for an ecosystem. It has been so difficult covering LG and then talking about things like cases or screen protectors. It doesn't feel like there's an ecosystem of accessories supporting this product. And you're like, my V60 feels a little incomplete. You know, I've been trying to find, like, what's going to be that good case to back up dual screen when I want to go single screen. Like, that stuff is hard. So this box shows up and it's lovely presentation. I'm one of 15. And if you want to see someone genuinely like, oh, well, this is fun again, I have the live stream up on YouTube. LG Velvet unboxing. It came in a fancy box is the name of the video. So that was last week in a nutshell. That was a lot. And this week is going to be no different. I'm catching up and starting to crank on some of these videos that have been out for a while. I'm thankfully going to have a headphone review out this week, which I've been so excited to talk about. Some planner magnetics. And kicking off my LG Velvet coverage and wrapping up my OnePlus 8 Pro coverage. So there's a lot. it's been really busy. I was trying to break it down. I think I put out more content last week than anyone could reasonably just watch in a week. So I'm hoping folks are having some fun with it, because it's been good times. Mr. Pulp Fiction, I thought this was well known. Trisha Hershberger's husband and Juan Bagnell visited the same college. Great news. Was Trisha talking about that? That's funny. Yeah. Trisha's husband, me, and my wife were all in the same theater program together. We were friends a long time ago. We still are friends. I shouldn't have said that in the past tense, but that's where we met. So it was good times. Root Night 5, I still think LG should make a bundle with Beyerdynamic and get a custom IEM made to bundle with their next flagship. I'm hoping we see LG start building back up. That's something we're going to talk about. There's so much to kind of dig into with the Velvet, where this does feel like a transition. This doesn't feel like this would have been an LG G series and they're just changing names. There's something a little different going on there, and I think it's interesting to see LG's pivot. Again, I'm going to save this conversation for the second half. I'm not used to doing my show an hour earlier, so the coffee hasn't fully kicked in like it normally does. Let's cover some news. All of the stories that we're going to be talking about this week, including all the housekeeping that I just wrapped up, can be found on somegadgetguy.com, the show notes for this episode, and then just the individual posts and articles that I put up on that website. I feel it's worth reminding folks out there, if you're catching my videos, I put up a higher quality video on somegadgetguy.com than what I publish on YouTube. So, for example, that Sony Xperia review that's up on YouTube, you can check it out on YouTube. It's a nicer video. It's a higher quality video if you catch it on somegadgetguy.com. That video has been blowing up on my blog. Sony fans care about things like video quality. So when that started trickling out, someone mentioned it on the Sony Xperia subreddit. My site stats got a huge shot in the arm because the audience of people who would be interested in a Sony would want to see that phone in higher quality video. Charlie Spirit song, beep, above 13 minutes. Did I hit 13? I started at like 8:07. It's 8:16. I was at like 8 minutes. Come on. Matt Tyler also saying, if you haven't listened to the Creator Chat one did with Adam, it was really great and informative. Adam, I have been so grateful for the folks that have been on Creator Chat for hosting those kinds of conversations. It's not like I'm trying to get people to air dirty laundry. But I do want audience members to know this stuff is getting more difficult. The challenges that you face creating content today are very different than they were even a couple years ago. And I'm glad that people have been game to share some of those experiences. Like, had another brief Twitter conversation with Viper last night. You know, following up with Viper, his channel is still mostly restricted. There's nothing restricted or unadvertiser friendly or you know, not age appropriate for a channel like Viper's. But YouTube is still messing with his channel. And like, if we can't suss some of this stuff out, if we can't share a broader, you know, viewpoint, broader collection of conversations, then what are we doing? Like, this stuff gets super boring really fast if it's overly manicured. And Root Night 5 and JT Moat having a conversation about Beyerdynamic as a partnership. I'll jump in. You know, a company like Beyerdynamic, Audio Technica, Sennheiser, I feel like if a traditional audio recording brand were to have any smartphone partnership, it should be a company like LG. The problem is they would want to have that partnership advertised really, really well. And the only company doing really good advertising is Samsung, and Samsung bought out AKG. So they're not going to jump and do a partnership with Audio Technica or Beyerdynamic. They own AKG. It's kind of interesting. I really wish a traditional audio brand would do something like that in mobile. I think it would be really cool. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen until someone shows that they've got the advertising budget to really show off that kind of a partnership. Stephanie Farmer on Facebook. As a smaller content creator, I completely agree with that. I can no longer monetize the bulk of my videos because I started a four kids channel in 2020. Like, that especially if you're doing work for kids. First of all, Stephanie Farmer is a friend of mine from college too. We were on the same step team in college. I was the token pale skin, and she was rocking probably the cutest little fro you ever did see. That transition in the market is obviously a very sensitive one. How we monetize and pay for content that's aimed at children should be a very sensitive conversation. But Stephanie Farmer runs a phenomenal summer STEM program. She's a teacher. She's brilliant. You can contribute, Steph, if you can. Shoot me just a quick message, and I'll drop a link, and hopefully people can contribute to your program. But it's really tricky. It's very tricky. If you want to make stuff for kids, you've got to pay for making that content, but you might not be able to monetize it. We should be very protective. We should be concerned about what ads are being served to kids. But then how do we actually fund the content that we make? And how do we fund the programs that kids are going to be able to take advantage of? And we don't have any other recourse. You know, you have an outlet like Facebook, you have an outlet like YouTube. I doubt it could go on Twitch. It's really heady stuff. It's going to be a major challenge over these next couple years. Because the only other thing that sort of makes sense is going through a traditional studio system. You go back to the old school gatekeepers of broadcast television and cable TV. You know, Disney can't be the only company with pockets deep enough to fund new content for kids. Stephanie Farmer, it's hard because I don't want my kids exposed to crazy, but I also need the funding. And those partnerships, I'm kind of talking directly to Stephanie here. I'm sure it's got to be extremely difficult to look at, you know, maybe I could get a sponsor. Does that sponsor responsibly interact with children? Are they going to craft responsible ads for the parents of these kids? Like, all of this stuff is very difficult, but I feel like the current solution we have right now was sort of just throw your hands up in the air and give up and no one can monetize. But thank you for making the content, because it's going to make YouTube a more popular platform. That's not sustainable. That can't be the end of the discussion. So, DTNL, this is basically turning into some gadget guy college meetup. That's hilarious. That's actually really funny. I don't know if Steph ever knew Nate. I'm going to have to make a college reunion happen. That's hilarious. Okay, let's get into some news. Let's knock out some news so we can get to talking about some of the fun stuff with this Velvet here. Especially, like I said, if you have any questions, we can jump in. I've already got a lot of opinions on what LG is doing here. So let me get this queued up here. All right, kicking off, this is a story that I just want to introduce because it was not on my radar, and it's something I think we should be paying attention to. It's something that I thought was a done deal, and now it might not be a done deal. So first of all, if you haven't been watching my show and you don't know about my sort of nerd crush on Gigi Sohn, Gigi Sohn was former counsel for the FCC under Tom Wheeler. She's one of the savviest voices in the telecommunications ISP and net neutrality space. Let me kick this over here. If you care about how our telecommunications infrastructure is managed, she is immediately one of the first resources I would point to for a quick education in the regulatory politics that goes into our telecom industry. Let me cue this up here. So she put out this tweet, and it kind of caught me by surprise. She writes, "Usually it takes a year or more until everyone realizes a big telecom or media merger sucks. With T-Mobile Sprint, it's taken just 2 months. Apparently, Dish wants to renegotiate the terms of its purchase of Boost, the prepaid carrier that was so central to the FCC and especially DOJ approving the deal, since it would allegedly aid in Dish becoming a new fourth mobile wireless competitor to replace Sprint. And the T-Mobile is balking, and if the Boost deal goes south, it's possible that the favorable network leasing agreement that allows Dish to build a business using T-Mobile's network also go south, which means no fourth competitor and consumers are left holding the bag again. And so FierceWireless.com wrote up an article just looking at this will they, won't they. I'm sorry, this is written up by Monica Alevin at FierceWireless.com. Let me get into the article here. Investment analysts are speculating today about apparently tense negotiations over T-Mobile's sale of the Boost Mobile business to Dish Network in terms of their MVNO agreement, which are part of the government's remedy in approving the T-Mobile Sprint merger. Analysts aren't saying that the drawn-out negotiations will unravel the merger, but they're questioning what it means for the overall competitive landscape and the role the government plays in getting the deal over a July 1st finish line. This is something that, like I said, it took me by surprise, but it's absolutely something that we should follow up on. When we first started talking about T-Mobile becoming, T-Mobile was going to get bought out by AT&T. When we have fewer players in the space, it's always bad for competition. T-Mobile gets this amazing deal from AT&T. They broadcast it, you know, regardless of whether or not this merger goes through. AT&T is going to be kicking $5 billion into T-Mobile's coffers just to negotiate this deal. Then it goes south and T-Mobile is able to use AT&T's cash to bolster their network and compete with, you know, super, super low pricing on data plans. When we started hearing about Sprint T-Mobile, it made me really anxious. If we don't have more competition, then it's easier for the market to kind of line up. A super huge T-Mobile Sprint against a super huge AT&T against a super huge Verizon. While we currently don't have an FCC that seems to care about regulating this stuff, it's unfortunate. Those companies, even if they're not directly colluding, can line up on their services more easily when there's not a smaller player to act as a disruptor. I really actually had high hopes that Dish could do that. Dish Networks has been buying up a lot of spectrum and a lot of air. So for these auctions for our telecom airspace, Dish owns a good chunk of very important spectrum that could go into a service like cell phone carrier. And so the idea was they would get this sweetheart deal from T-Mobile to lease access on T-Mobile's network until they started building out their own direct competing network. It sounds a little too good to be true. I had hopes that this would be the reality of our landscape, that Dish would become a fourth place player. Now it's looking a little less likely that Dish is trying to play this directly. It seems like they might be sitting on the spectrum just to lease it out to other companies that need more air. If Verizon had better designs on their Sub-6 network, they could lease this access from Dish and then have, you know, the ability to roll out towers and carriers. So it's valuable commodity, but it's kind of like having an empty apartment building. It's Dish is sitting on this resource until they can get the money they think they can get for it, as opposed to Dish really looking to invest in their own telecommunications infrastructure. It's heady stuff. So I'm putting this on your radar. We should be very concerned. I do not want fewer telecoms in the space. Any region that you live in where you've got issues with pricing, with access, or with competitive infrastructure, it's because you probably don't have good competition. If it's cable, DSL, if it's mobile phone networks. Well, only Verizon works in my neck of the woods. Well, that means Verizon can do whatever they want. And you just have to go along for the ride. If you can't take your business somewhere else, or you're too entrenched in Verizon's business model, then Verizon will extract as much wealth from you as they can. So it's tough. GG Zone, keep an eye on Boost, keep an eye on Dish, and hopefully we see them step up to the plate. July 2nd seems to be a pretty big deal. July 1st, I'm sorry. The July 1st cutoff seems to be a pretty big deal. Like these like GG in like the article said, I seriously doubt this is going to impact the Sprint T-Mobile deal at all. That merger is so advanced at this point. Regardless, sure, I guess we'll just let that go. And maybe Dish needs to pay a fine. Well, $100,000, Dish. And you should have promised us to do better business. Meh.
Hey, folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Moving right along. Let's jump into something else that's just a little bit silly. Who here is still, like, dealing with Flash, Adobe Flash? I think on my desktop, I've been looking at Update Flash Player for 2 weeks, maybe three, and I still haven't bothered to update Flash Player. And maybe that's fine, because Adobe wants users to uninstall Flash Player by the end of the year. Adobe Flash Player will reach end of life on December 31st, 2020, written up by Catalin Simpanu. I don't know how to say your name. I am so sorry. This is over from ZDNet. Adobe plans to prompt users and ask them to uninstall Flash Player from their computers by the end of the year when the software is scheduled to reach end of life on December 31st, 2020. The move was announced in a new Flash Player EOL support page, that Adobe published earlier this month, 6 months before the EOL date. Adobe says that once Flash Player reached the EOL date, the company doesn't merely plan to stop providing updates. They also plan to remove all Flash Player download links from their website. And this will prevent users from installing the software and continuing to use an unmaintained version. Let me get this over here. Charlie Spirit Song. People still dig the old Flash games, and they even made a repository. I can't remember what it's called. Someone please tell me what it's called. There's a project to convert old Flash games to HTML. And it's something like you can download it as an archive. And I want to say it's something crazy. It's like 8 gigabytes of old browser-based games that have been converted to HTML5. Heike, finally, can we now get rid of Flash Player? Yeah, I'm gonna uninstall early. I know I've got a Flash Player plugin on Chrome that keeps telling me I need to update. But Root Knight 5, Firefox cut Flash support years ago. And the Sentinel 909 is lurking on this stream. From Steve, Q3 Becker, so many Miniclip and Newgrounds games lost. I don't think many are. Actually, I think a huge number of these old classic Flash games have been backed up. Charlie Spirit Song is saying 200 gigabytes. Well, what is it called? What is this project? I know there's like an actual project name that is going through and backing up these old Flash titles and Flash games. Someone look it up. I unfortunately cannot host a podcast and like find this stuff in real time. Hold on. Let me get this. Oh, you know what I do have? We're going to take just a quick break here. Facebook is making this more difficult than it needs to be. Come on. Open this right here. Okay. So Steph Farmer, Steph Rock. There we go. Okay. So I'm going to drop this in the live chat. This will also be added to my show notes. My friend, Stephanie Farmer, she runs a STEM summer camp. And there's a secure.givelively.org donation link. If there's anything that you can contribute, Marie and I have donated to this cause. I can even screen share it. This is a STEM and STEAM, I should say, summer camp in New York, helping people fund science education over the summers. Something that's going to be especially, I think, especially valuable with sort of school years being a bit disrupted. And if you have the ability to, I would greatly appreciate, and I'm sure Stephanie would greatly appreciate a contribution. Any little bit might help when we're talking about STEM education for kids. And she still does go by Steph Rock. It makes me happy. My step crew name wasn't as inspired. It was just JC. Steph Rock was a lot cooler than I was. All right, back into some news. Matt Tyler, I have no issues donating to places. It's worth it. I'll be donating to this. Thank you, Matt. Matt Tyler is the loveliest teddy bear in my live stream, and a lot of empathy. He's contributed to a number of causes that I think have been well received for his support and his contributions. So let's move this along. We got some Facebook news to follow up on. We've been talking about Facebook and politics and social media, the spread, the dissemination of bad information. And this is a trend that I actually find to be a little bit more concerning than people have been sort of schadenfreudenly talking about. So actually, let me just kick into the screen share rather than set up this article. Coming by way of Mashable, who's the byline on this? Haiti Chu. Haiti Chu over at Mashable. Facebook drops and YouTube rises as a source of U.S. news. YouTube's in, Facebook's out. Google's video streaming platform is catching up to Facebook as the most popular social media platform for news in the United States, a new report finds. According to a 2020 digital news report the Reuters Institute published on Tuesday, the number of Americans who use Facebook for news decreased by 4% from last year. YouTube, on the other hand, saw a 4% increase. Overall, 35% of Americans use Facebook for news, while 24% use YouTube. The report came amid ongoing debates over how social media platforms should handle misinformation in light of the situation, the imminent presidential election, and the mass social unrest around systemic racism and police. So this is actually, hold on. Let me see if can I click on this? Yeah. Okay. So number one, Facebook down 4%. Number two, YouTube up 4%. Number three, Twitter coming in at around 17% for news. And then out of that, it's Facebook-owned properties. Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp are also significant contributors in the top six for social media and messaging, how people acquire information and get news. So technically, yeah. Oh, there we go. Yeah, ER 1980. Technically, four of the six are Facebook or Facebook-owned. Fat Produce, it is so key to be consistently questioning and verifying the sources of any news article found on Facebook or Twitter as we get closer to the election. Completely agree. And also wouldn't rely on Facebook or Twitter self-policing. I know Twitter's been putting out, you know, links or I should say like flagging content. This isn't better. Trading YouTube for Facebook is not better. In fact, in many ways, YouTube might be worse as a platform for disseminating news. This makes me very concerned that we're going from one lazily, easily accessible monster data aggregation service to the largest video streaming platform that is run on algorithms and manipulates your feed of content to serve you popularity indexed information. I'm very concerned. If there's no other platform, like Reddit wouldn't be better, I don't think. YouTube, I think, is maybe even is as problematic as Facebook. Twitter is kind of a dumpster fire right now.
I would really encourage people to just seek out news in methods or in forms where you're just going directly to websites as opposed to cultivating editorial and opinion on video streaming platforms, or you're watching a managed feed on an algorithm like Facebook's. It's getting really rough out there. I think a number of people have correctly commented, you know, especially in this live chat, social media is an unsustainable monster. You know, we can't keep playing this game both ways of, well, we just distribute this content. We're not editorial, but we reserve the editorial right to remove content, and we need to keep our advertisers happy. It's becoming a bigger and bigger problem. I think the bottom is going to kind of fall out on this. Unfortunately, I don't think we can course correct. I think we're going to have to see some kind of significant issue befall one of these services before we really start correcting for it. From Matt Tyler, Facebook's still in the top. Does no one listen? By the way, catch Across the Podcast with Sam and Matt on our new page over on Facebook. You nerd. Sam and Matt run a great live stream on Sundays. And apparently they just set up a Facebook page. From Root Night 5, the general rule is to always check multiple sources. And that's also like, again, it's like trying to find people who operate within that old school realm of journalistic integrity is very difficult. I'm a commentator on this stuff, and I would never claim to be a reliable source to the same journalistic standard. We enjoy these conversations because we're fans of tech. I'm coming at this from a tech enthusiast perspective, but I still hope to discuss newsworthy topics in a way that broadens the conversation. But as soon as I mention one of these articles or I talk about one of these stories, I hope that people are following up on my show notes and the links to see that we're looking at, you know, good sources for discussing this content. From Blue Malicious, I've enjoyed on the BBC, they've regularly been doing reality checks on stories, especially where a lot of pictures or videos are being shared, tracing back the earliest record of the video or picture, and most of the time it's not the event it claims to be. So many times we've seen, you know, like, oh, look at this social unrest. And you're like, that was from a natural catastrophe 4 years ago. You just got, you know, some stock imagery that you wanted to slap in there. It's pretty rough. And from Root Night 5, you can't exactly claim to not be a publisher and then promote content. And that's the trickiest part. It's that little sliver of gray area. You know, like YouTube operates their own news feed. You know, swipe left on an Android phone on the home screen and you'll get topics you might be interested. They are a publisher, but they're just on the line of being able to claim, well, we don't editorialize and we don't publish content. We're just a platform for other people to share content. And this is exactly the kind of reform we need to look at for things like the Communications Decency Act. It's so messy and it's so tangled up right now. And I don't think we've got the wherewithal to fix it. I think, unfortunately, we're going to have to break a few things and put them back together. Rubster RC, I dumped Facebook years ago. So I don't think I've logged into Facebook for a couple months. Like, I literally broke my Facebook login streak today just to get that message from Stephanie Farmer. And Stephanie Farmer, I need to give you my current email address so you can send me things not on Facebook. Shaka Zulu, how late am I to the live stream? Hello, all. You're not late at all. You arrived at the right time for you, because we're going to move on to another quick Facebook story. This is the kind of pressure I hope we can see mounted more. Remember how I was saying, like, gaming on mobile has issues because of all the gambling mechanics built into games, and how Apple is getting sued for having gambling mechanics in games aimed at kids on the App Store. If we don't affect income, if we don't affect profits, these megacorps have no incentive to change the way they operate. So when I see a story like this coming by way of Business Insider, written up by Tanya Dua, we're in, we're out. The North Face becomes the first major company to boycott Facebook as the calls for advertisers to walk out of the platform in July intensify. The North Face has become the first major brand to boycott Facebook on the heels of mounting pressure from civil rights organizations over the platform's content moderation policies and handling of hate speech in the aftermath of George Floyd's death. In a tweet saying, "We're in, we're out," the clothing company announced Friday it would stop buying Facebook ads in the U.S. in solidarity with organizations including the NAACP, the Anti-Defamation League, and Sleeping Giants. In a follow-up statement to Business Insider, the company said it would also halt paid advertisements on Instagram, which is owned by Facebook. Steve Lenard, I think that's how you say his name, Lenard, the North Face's global VP of marketing, said in a statement, quote, "We know that for too long, harmful racist rhetoric and misinformation has made the world unequal and unsafe, and we stand with the NAACP and other organizations who are working to hashtag stop hate for profit." I love it. We have a rich tradition of citizen activation when it comes to things like boycotts. It's a primary method for us in a capitalistic society to share our frustration by voting with our wallet. I think in this modern era, we feel like those types of gestures aren't sufficient. But I would argue any little bit that might influence a shareholder to put pressure on a corporation to protect their investment in a stock price, the visuals on this, the optics on this, it doesn't take much. Look at the YouTube adpocalypse. One or two YouTubers can wreck monetization for the entire platform. If the visibility and the optics are poor, the confidence in that platform drops rapidly. This is the first company to make a stand. I'm excited to see North Face actually put out a statement that they are willing to stand behind and not play it halfway. Oh, we're totally gonna pull our Facebook advertising, but check out our Instagram ads. You know, like, it's not enough to say we're going to boycott Facebook and not step away from everything that Facebook owns. To really make the stand, you really got to make the stand. So whatever your feelings, you know, like whether or not this makes you more or less likely, more inclined or less inclined to do business with the North Face, I feel like this is a more important gesture than just putting a blackout image on Instagram. You know, like, we're going to say we're for BLM and we're also still going to dump money into platforms and services, which, you know, historically have not been good platforms for having these types of grown up conversations. But yeah, we're totally there. If you're really, as a corporation, you're going to back a certain political side, you got to do it for real. You can't just make a social media post on the platforms that people are saying are problematic and then be like, oh, good enough. People know we really care. So, yeah. We're not going to be getting into a broader or more in-depth conversation on some of these other institutions and stuff. It's not whether or not you can verify the work that the NAACP has done. It's right now we're talking about a corporation who is trying to do something different in light of horrible mismanagement on Facebook's platform. The story is about Facebook and the North Face. And we're not going to get too distracted by other aspects of that conversation, because I'd really, really like to not have to police the live feed too much here. LFA reviews. We are early because we're trying to avoid stepping too much on WWDC. So, Route 95, the more entities pull out from Facebook, the better. Again, if we want Facebook to change, Mark Zuckerberg has to be shown that his bottom line can be affected by terrible policy. Facebook's policy on this is ridiculously inconsistent. And if they can't back their platform, then I feel we do need to reform their protections from being a platform and not a publisher. Nah, that's not the gig. If they can't actually manage this stuff, then we need to take it away from them. Route 95. Also, please, for the love of God, why people don't switch to Telegram, please. I got into another conversation with someone on Twitter. I was like, well, yeah, I would use Android, but I don't have iMessage. And I'm like, man, messaging is so... It's such a pain. Boing by Signal, bruv. I was like, I want encryption. I want ease of use. RCS plugin support would be nice. It's like, I also need something that I can talk to my grandmother on. But yeah, moving right along. Maybe one of the most important aspects. This is the only thing I want to tease as we get into WWDC is going to be in about an hour here. I hope that this is a move Apple really is going to position hard. This is an article by way of the New York Times. And for as much as I have issues with how Apple does business and how they fight right to repair legislation and how expensive their ecosystem is to really exist in, if they can make this transition, if they can approach this move for the rest of their company as they have for iPads and iPhones, it's not going to make me more likely to pick up a Mac, but it's going to make me very excited for the landscape of hardware. It's actually going to make me less likely personally to shop a Mac, but it's going to make me more excited about the potential for better competition. So this is an article coming by way of the New York Times, written up by Don Clark and Jack Nikas. Let me get into screen share here. After 15 years, Apple prepares to break up with Intel. Apple could announce plans as soon as Monday to replace Intel processors and Macs with chips that it designed itself. Coming out of New York Times, Silicon Valley is bracing for a long-expected breakup of Apple and Intel, signaling both the end of one of the tech industry's most influential partnerships and Apple's determination to take more control of how its products are built. Apple has been working for years on designing chips to replace the Intel microprocessors used in Mac computers, according to five people with knowledge of the effort who weren't authorized to speak about it. They say Apple could announce its plans as soon as a company conference for developers on Monday, with computers based on the new chips arriving next year. Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing partner, they're talking about TSMC, the partner Apple uses to build similar components, its designs for iPhones and iPads, is expected to make the Mac chips in factories in Asia, an arrangement much like Apple's use of Foxconn to assemble iPhones. Intel and Apple declined to comment. So the rest of the article goes on just to talk about some of the financials, some of the impact. This wouldn't be a major hit to Intel's bottom line. This wouldn't be a major hit to Intel's bottom line. We're talking about a very small percentage of Intel chipsets that really go into Mac systems. But this would make me incredibly interested in what could Apple do? We know
Apple is looking at moving mobile. So their ARM game is really strong when it comes to the A series chips that go into iPhones and into iPads. The iPad is being positioned as a premium but lower cost laptop alternative to getting a MacBook. And Intel has had some issues with their recent strategy and chip fab. People are saying especially in terms of like die shrinks, you know, making the chip more efficient by making it smaller. They're at least a year behind where AMD is. And it would seem to me a corporation as large as Apple would like to have more control over their own destiny. So the notion that like, oh, well, I mean, we could just flip from Intel to AMD. We'll start offering AMD Mac Pros and AMD MacBooks. And that'll solve the problem. It really doesn't. it's a significant engineering change to just swap chipsets and components and broker manufacturing deals, even for the small number of computers that Apple really sells in proportion to the rest of the computer landscape. But really, the only thing that kind of makes sense for Apple at this point is to learn the lesson that they did of the iPhone, which is have more control over the platform. For me personally, this makes it less likely that I would want to buy a Mac. I already have an issue with consumer and platform lock-in, proprietary parts, makes repairs more difficult, makes upgrades more difficult. I have serious concerns over Apple introducing a product where maybe you could do a processor upgrade. It's already, you know, been problematic for Apple, especially through the iMac generations of trying to glue their computer shut. But what I would be very interested in seeing is, could we expect the same type of hardware-software synergy that we see from the iPhone on something like a MacBook? When you have Mac OS built, coded, created, developed for very specific hardware components that Apple is fully in control of, that could be a really exciting product synergy. And when we see that, I'm hoping that this will kind of open the door, just nudge the door open a little bit for other companies to kind of consider the same thing. I was very excited to hear that Google might be looking at making their own chipsets for a Pixel, and they're looking at Samsung as their manufacturing partner, their chip fab. That's exactly what I want to see. I want to see someone else come in and shake up the dynamic between, you know, AMD and Intel. Been really excited to see AMD flip on chiplet design and just run Intel hard for this current generation of desktop processors. I would like to see someone do that to Qualcomm. The only alternative, I mean, the only consumer viable alternative, especially here in the United States, is the Apple A series. We're really talking price performance and getting like a really, really premium, powerful chipset. The lower end, you can do with a MediaTek. Not a lot of companies are really looking to kind of present those in anything more than entry-level fare. I'd love to see more MediaTek in the mid-range. This new Dimensity actually looks like a pretty solid chipset. I haven't had the opportunity to try one. I mean, I'm only on my very first Qualcomm 700 series processor of the year. I've only played with the cheap Helio P35. I'd like to see anyone else try and give Qualcomm a bit more competition in this space. So Apple walking away from Intel, not going with AMD, but potentially going with their own hardware design, has huge ramifications for shaking this industry up. It's going to be the rallying cry. More competition is going to be better. Fat produce. I wonder if the CPU shift will cause game compatibility issues for the 12 people that game on Macs. In a way, I actually think it could make gaming more viable on Mac if they look at creating services and maybe even like game streaming platforms based on their own hardware designs.
I don't know. I mean, it's funny. Apple are not have historically not been very good at gaming. Matt Tyler, as soon as Apple start using their own chips, it forces Intel to up their game because competition forces companies to perform better, which is good for consumers like us. Absolutely agree. Root Knight 5, there's a rumor of AMD CPUs for Mac, so it might end up ARM on the MacBook Air and below, and AMD for the Pro machines. I am very surprised that we haven't seen a Mac Pro option with a Threadripper. Again, it's not as easy as just swap out a couple components. A Mac Pro needs to be built to an Apple specification with Apple components, Apple certifications, Apple support. It's a Pro device. It's going to cost more. It's going to cost more to maintenance. It's going to cost more to keep running. But I'm still kind of surprised. You know, they've got those Intel server chips in there. I know there are some pros who would be very interested in what an Apple AMD partnership could look like. Starting out at the lower end, we know their ARM game is so strong. I'm, you know, for all the people like, oh, this new iPad keyboard is so awesome. It is. It's a beautiful little piece of engineering. I really wish we could stop pretending that an iPad with a built with an attached flip hinge keyboard wouldn't sell like crazy. Bring back the iBook. Just do it. Stop making me separate these things. Just give me a proper clamshell touchscreen Mac driven experience. Have it run iPad OS. Have a huge battery because you have more room on that keyboard. You can make it ultra, ultra thin at the same time. It makes me sad, especially because, you know, the ARM processor game is so strong right now. Root Knight 5, Qualcomm needs competitors, but Samsung has had a really rough 2020 in general for phones.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people. Producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
The Android Police Podcast comes at you three times a week to talk about the latest in Android news and to chat with our colleagues in tech media about wider subjects like the auto industry and what we do at trade shows. And we also do a fun Q&A stream each week too. Catch us live on twitch.tv/AndroidPolice or listen anywhere you get your podcasts.
Vazicos 8, the Dimensity, that's the MediaTek. Dimensity 1000 can be good. It looks like it's solid. I really wish I had a phone I could try it on because I'd love to see where it fits, especially knowing that, you know, it's not going to be as expensive a component as what Qualcomm charges for their premium chipsets. It would be nice to have any other option there. Oh, this is a good point from Ronald. You can kiss Thunderbolt 3 goodbye unless Intel makes a chipset to translate. So yeah, it might actually be a bit of an issue, but I'd be curious to see. I'm sure Apple has this data, but I'd be curious to see how many folks really did jump on Thunderbolt or just using Thunderbolt as USB-C plus. Right? It's got support for all this stuff, but really we're all using USB-C gadgets with it. The whole notion of external GPUs, I thought was going to be a bigger deal. When we started covering those at Newegg, I thought like, this is going to blow stuff up. And not literally, figuratively. I was really excited. You know, I could have this cute, sleek little laptop at, you know, for travel, and then I could plug it in at home and run like at the time a 1080 Ti, man, this is going to be awesome. And it really hasn't been awesome. Like it's been barely a blip, but I get real cranky when I don't have good USB-C support. Like my wife's Surface laptop is super annoying to set up for a dock. Having a DisplayPort and a USB-A makes it so much more difficult just to set her up with an external monitor and have all of her accessories connected. It's such a pain, but you know what would have fixed that is just a single USB-C port that has video out. Why USB-A can't handle that? I know there are reasons and pins and all that compatibility and stuff, but I don't even need Thunderbolt for that. And especially in light of the recent security issues with Thunderbolt, Apple has to use proprietary hardware and security chips to kind of mitigate
some of the access that Thunderbolt 3 gives to bad actors. Excuse me. So that could also be another thing that Apple's looking at. Anything that might potentially make pro products less secure might just need to go. You know, I'm sure pros are out there with Thunderbolt hardware going, man, this would suck. But if anyone can also just, you know, flip the switch and get their customers to jump on board, it's Apple. And if they say, oh, no, security, USB-C over Thunderbolt, a lot of people would just go, yes, we agree. So again, I feel like if anyone can make this transition, Apple's probably in the best shape to roll their own. And then people would also have that kind of like home team pride, right? You know, it's like it's got an Apple processor in it. It's not one of those Intels. I don't know. We'll see. And Kyle Ruggles made it. Hey, Kyle Ruggles. Mr. Pulp Fiction, does Juan use any Microsoft Surface devices? I personally do not, but my wife uses a Surface laptop. So I poke around on Surfaces. Vazicose 8 USB 4 can help. Yeah. I mean, like, even what is it? USB 3. I can't remember the full name. Was it USB 3.1 Gen 2x2? Is that the current premium spec for USB? I can't remember if it's USB 3.2 or if it's USB 3.1 Gen 2.2. Something like that. Anyway, I would be very surprised if there are a significant enough number of pros that couldn't be on top spec USB and need Thunderbolt. I'd really like to know what that is. Apple knows what those numbers are. I'm sure Apple has good reports on who is using what on their products. So Boeing by saying USB 3.2 Gen 2, but there's also another like dual lane, like it's USB 3 Gen 2 by, I'm going to have to look it up. Anyway, USB needs a better name. I mean, if you're going to call them generations, just say USB Gen 3.2 or USB 4 or something. We can fix this. Anyway, short story, incredibly long. I am anxiously very excited that Apple might jump into their own chip fabrication. I will not be buying anything, especially first gen, with an Apple chip inside in terms of a laptop or a desktop, but I'm very hopeful that this continues to put pressure on AMD and Intel and Qualcomm for the next generations of not only mobile products but also desktops and home computers and laptops. Cool. All right. Going to take a quick break from news. I'm going to drink a little water here because we've got to talk about the subreddit. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no exception. I should have pulled the subreddit up in my browser. I'm just vamping and stalling for time. And now it's up. Some subreddits are all about sort of a community where people can hang out. Some subreddits are there just to tell the hosts how cool they are. Some subreddits are about sharing the news stories, trying to upvote the news stories that might be covered on each week's episode. LFA Reviews is absolutely correct that this is the best subreddit, though. And it's sort of been proven to be building some community support. Every month we're getting a few more members, a few more subscribers to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. My subreddit, the subreddit for this show that you're listening to or watching right now, is all about trying to help promote and build audience for people we think deserve more attention. So it's not a me subreddit. It's not a podcast news subreddit, but we want to find new voices in tech. We want to find people making engaging content. We also want to try and help boost the numbers for people who might not be getting the attention they deserve. And that might even be on a larger channel. We've had conversations about classic tech hosts struggling to find new audience in this current flavor of YouTubery. So my subreddit, and hopefully a community that you'll start participating in, participating with also, is built to try and
end run algorithms. If we can help promote, then content creators will get a boost. They'll become more popular on these platforms, and we hopefully broaden the tech conversation. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. These are the top stories on the subreddit this week. A number one, coming by way of Ben's Gadget Reviews, LG Velvet dual screen unboxing and hands on. Again, a 15 kits went out early look at the South Korean model of the LG Velvet. And Ben's was one of the first videos out the gate, so he's getting some monster traffic on this video. It's a great first look at the Velvet, which we're going to be talking about here in the gadget block. Number two on the subreddit, TK MyBay, Xperia 1 Mark II review, the things I liked and the things I did not. And I love his thumbnail. His thumbnail is actually a little difficult to suss out, but it's an Xperia 1 Mark II with a wireless lav plugged into the headphone jack, a USB laptop dock with extra USB ports, and connected to an HDMI external monitor so that he can see the monitor while he's shooting video from the Xperia 1 Mark II. It's something I love to show off on LG phones. It's something like a lot of premium Android phones can do. TK really showing off. If you're going to make things with a phone, you have a proper platform to do that on an Xperia 1 Mark II. And then number three, my buddy, Shaka Armstrong. He was my producer when I was doing segments on Fox LA. He's been working with reviews.org. He's got a great look at the TCL 10 Pro. And then rounding out the rest of the top stories on our glowing rectangles, we've got Issa Does Tech, also with an LG Velvet hands-on and a camera tour. Some doofy guy in a cap with a punchable face, also sharing an Xperia 1 review, kind of hate his face. We've got Joshua Vergara, also taking a look back at the Focals by North. This was a very important product for me to revisit at the very beginning of the situation and social distancing. This is such a rare opportunity for us to test products to see if they really live up to some of these expectations. And Josh has a slightly different take on the Focals by North. But again, it's like, if we don't really examine and review, like, how did these products live up to those expectations, then really all we're going to do is only talk about Samsung and Apple. Think of all the stories that you've seen on Apple might be making AR glasses. Well, we know they are. But what if you could get a heads-up display today? What does that look like? I know it seems safe to wait for Apple to prove the market and to, you know, for when they invent a new technology. But that also means you're counting yourself out of current competition, the stuff that they could be working on today, the stuff that you could be using right now, instead of waiting for Samsung and Apple to figure out how they can make the most money off of a newer tech that might disrupt something else that they already own as a product. Moving right along, rounding out the rest of the top 10 here, across the podcast with Sam and Matt featuring Trenton Marshall. We've got Mr. Tech Rant chatting with Sam and Matt on their stream. We've got the Benefit of the Dowd podcast, my buddy Adam Dowd interviewing Brad Mullen and Jason Gurdon from TCL. So talking a little bit more TCL 10 Pro. And we've got LFA Reviews, the true $50 King Anchor Soundcore Life Q10 Bluetooth headphones update. Matt Black, LFA Reviews. Again, if you love your ears, you should absolutely be following LFA Reviews to check out some of those headphone and earbud reviews. I mean, I guess if you hate your ears, if you absolutely just cannot stand better quality audio content, if you hate being able to hear things, then don't follow LFA. Don't. It's the worst thing you could do. If you would just prefer to not be able to hear things and you hate high quality audio content, don't follow his YouTube channel. So, LFA pipes in. Thank you, some gadget guy. Hashtag LFA day. It makes me so crazy. I wish, you know, like, I wish I could come up with like a three letter. So, you know, he's LFA, you know, E-L-J-E-F-E. But if you say it fast enough, it's just the letters L-F-A. And he's got his hashtag LFA day. I wish I had something like that. I would very much enjoy that. So yes, the subreddit, again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. We're closing in. We're actually getting there a little faster than I thought we would. We're at 935 members on the subreddit. This is a cute little organically growing subreddit community. And again, the mission is, who deserves more attention for the work that they're doing? Share a video, share an article. We've been getting a few more written articles and actually direct posts too. Like, we've had a few people reviewing devices just in text posts on the subreddit. But we know we can be a good support for content creators out there. You know, people on medium-sized channels, people on larger channels, people just starting and trying to monetize. If we don't have engaged participation, if we're not active participants in this, then it's significantly more difficult for a new voice to break through. So let's be the change we want to see in the world, and let's see if we can help a few folks out. Because I promise you, every week I make this plea. If you've never been to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles before, and you go, you will likely find a tech reviewer or tech commentator that you've never seen before, and you're going to be all about their channel after you check it out. But again, you won't find a lot of these people just through YouTube's algorithms or Facebook's algorithms or Twitter sharing and retweeting. We have to actively participate. It's not enough just to passively watch one video and say, oh, that was pretty neat. I hope they make more. Share on social media. If you have the means, a direct financial contribution, any of these people would greatly appreciate some support like that too. But I can't tell you how invaluable it is just to get a few more shares. I mean, just the fact that I told the Sony Xperia people, hey, by the way, like, the higher quality video versions on somegadgetguy.com blew up my channel stats in one day. It makes it so much easier to continue producing content to help monetize. You know, maybe some people might be interested in some affiliate links or a Patreon subscription, something like that. But without that direct active engagement, it's so much harder to look at this and go like, do I want to keep participating? Do I want to keep producing? It's pretty tough. So, LFA reviews. I can smell 1,000 members on the horizon. I need something. I need good suggestions. I've been saying this for the last couple weeks. What should we do on the Glowing Rectangle subreddit to celebrate 1,000 subscribers? I'm not going to do a giveaway. I really don't like doing giveaways, and they've gotten significantly more difficult with how you're supposed to disclose, how taxes might be paid, shipping, FTC requirements, where you can publicize. Like, I can't talk about giveaways through certain plugins and using certain apps or services on YouTube. It's just super dicey, and it's more trouble than it's worth most of the time, because also a contest or a giveaway just brings contest junkies, and we don't want those people in our really pretty, fun, cute subreddit. DTNL, virtual pizza party when we hit 1,000 subs. I like it. Virtual Zoom garden party. I kind of like that too. From Hakey, a party in your house. That won't happen. LFA, contest junkies are the worst. I mean, again, like, if I need 100 people with zero followers on Twitter with egg profile icons to follow me, then I'm doing something wrong. I don't want that. It's such garbage. Charlie Spirit Song, I think UFD Tech channel got struck due to a giveaway because Google hates Gleam. And if I do a giveaway, I need help. You know, like, Gleam is a gross little service, but like, I can't host an international giveaway on my own. So anyway, that's what we're not going to do. We're not going to do a giveaway. But I kind of like the idea of maybe trying to do some kind of like
live community stream, or maybe like a movie watch along, or I don't know, something silly or goofy. I don't know that anyone wants to do an online virtual dance party, but maybe that's what we have to do. I don't know. Give me some suggestions, something fun that you'd like to see that really embraces the community of people that are interested in helping share good content. Aditya Anil, I think I have the egg profile picture on Twitter. Oof, am I a giveaway junkie? If you go to your Twitter and it's nothing but retweeting contest links, then yes. If you just have an egg profile picture, it's fine. I'm not going to harsh on you wanting to stay private. So, Ronald saying movie night. I think a movie night could be fun. You know, maybe pick like something real nerdy. Like if we all get a stream going for something like, I don't know, like War Games or Daryl, or I'm trying to think what would be some other good, like good Colossus, the Forbin Project. Oh man, I would love to host a Colossus stream. And hey, Trent Marshall's in the live chat. Everyone say, hey, Mr. Tech Rant. Tron. Oof, man, Tron is a marathon too. That movie, if you guys have tried to watch Tron recently, my daughter loves Tron Legacy. She really likes the sequel. Something about like, oh, but his dad is trapped in a computer and he needs to save his dad. And it's just so like touching. Like if I were ever trapped in a computer, my daughter would try to save me. But the old Tron is pretty rough. That movie is so groundbreaking and amazing and philosophical and deep and not that entertaining. It's not a fun movie and it's not aged well. All right. Let's kick this over. Last plug, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I'm seeing more sharing. I'm seeing more upvoting. You know, it's not uncommon for all of the top 10 submissions being double digit upvotes, which is huge. The subscriptions are up. We can always use more help sharing. We can always use more help promoting. An individual, actually, I need to highlight them. Ted. He puts together TED Talks video, but I need to give Saeed Okoroji on Twitter, Saeed Ted, a huge shout out, because he's been putting together daily recaps who hits the top of Glowing Rectangles. This is a dude with 68 followers on Twitter. So the impact is you know, a little bit more limited. Here, let me get this on. And Aditya Anil, he did join the Discord, the Some Gadget Guy Discord. But Saeed Ted is making these daily recaps. So, you know, again, every little bit helps. Every little bit contributes to helping promote a community, helping promote a content creator. And here's someone doing it himself, where he's saying like, hey, this is the top story today on Glowing Rectangles. And it's the day that Shaka Armstrong won the top upvotes for his TCL 10 Pro review. The day before that, hyping up smart glasses from Josh Vergara. My video on making a routine for getting pulled over using Google Assistant. So this is, again, this is exactly, you know, like be the change you want to see. Every little bit, if you want to help a content creator grow, a passive view is not enough. But you can see people out there trying to help build communities, build conversations. And that's what makes me really excited. It's not just big numbers for the sake of big numbers. These are individual content creators that greatly benefit from that kind of community support. So it's good times. I want to say thank you to Saeed Ted for doing that. I'm happy to share and retweet. And hopefully also he should have more followers on Twitter. He seems like a good dude. All right. We can wrap this up now. But I do need to, because I'm real bad about the Twitter stuff. Not the Twitter stuff, the Twitch stuff. I need to highlight a huge shout out, a huge thank you to Gary the Fireman, gifting two tier one subs to Some Gadget Guys community. Gary the Fireman's gift shared rewards to five others in chat, and he shared a tier one sub to Mr. M Dub and to the Sentinel 909. Gary the Fireman, thank you so much for supporting
I've seen you on numerous live streams and super chats on YouTube, and seeing you gifting some subs here on my Twitch stream, even though I'm terrible at shouting out the Twitch stuff. I really appreciate it. Again, every little bit helps in continuing this kind of content. Who wants to talk about the LG Velvet? Anyone? Bueller? I'm gonna drink some water here while I take another sip here. Ooh, this is a fun one. Shonda Thomas over on Facebook, who's watching this, because I'm still streaming to Facebook. I'm streaming on Facebook to try and tell people to stop using Facebook. Like Matt and Sam. Facebook is the worst, but you can check out our Facebook page. Shonda Thomas, thanks. Thanks. I'm dumping Facebook and moving to Reddit. Again, little bits of change. Little topics here and there. Shonda. And also, Shonda, great to hear from you. It's been a really long time. I think the last time we got to chat was right before the writer's strike. Yeah. So that was before I made the move over to casting. I was still Abrams Artists. Or correct me if I'm wrong there. I might totally have that wrong, Shonda. But I hope you're doing well. Okay. Moving on. Again, this is sort of like a Juan Carlos Bagnell, Here Is Your Life. Steph Rock, Shonda, people bringing up my relationship with Trisha Hershberger's husband, my bro crush on Nate, because his Jesus Christ Superstar is pretty solid. Shonda, yeah, it was a minute. Oh, man. I'm really trying to, and Sean, I'm so sorry. I'm really trying to remember if, I'm sure I had to have called you in on a casting or something. So maybe not quite writer's strike, but yeah, maybe it was like 2012? Would it have been that long ago? Okay. Anyway, moving right along. Let's talk about a really cute, sexy phone. This is the LG Velvet. It's very pretty. Actually, let me take it out of the case here. I'm using this case, for those of you who are listening to this podcast. This came in a very fancy box from LG, and it made me really excited because it came with accessories. It's something that other companies present and promote really well. And I feel like this is a move cribbed from a company like OnePlus. You deliver the full experience of what a OnePlus ecosystem would look like. So I get a OnePlus 8, or actually no, let me say this. I get a OnePlus 8 Pro, and it comes with a case, and it comes with the wireless fast charger, and it comes with like a little booklet, kind of a reviewer guide. You put all that together and you immediately get a sense of what a OnePlus lifestyle would resemble. LG has never been very good at that game. The Velvet presentation was so much better than anything I think LG has ever put together as a reviewer, as a reviewer package. It's so good. I really wish they would sell this as a limited edition for consumers. I just think it would be huge. So the Velvet came with two different cases, the dual screen case, the bamboo stylus, stylus. You can immediately use the whole experience of the phone as soon as you open the box. But this is the LG Velvet. It's very pretty. This is the one in green. I already have some really strong feelings about what it is that LG is trying to... how LG is trying to pivot here. So we've already seen the specs were already leaked well ahead of the phone launch. The design has already been kind of a known entity. You can kind of see like just that top and bottom bezel, very similar cutout to what we have on the V60. So for that selfie camera notch at the top of the phone. And then we know, it's got the curved edges, the curved glass. It's a very thin rail on the side of the phone. That makes me very anxious. So immediately what I want to do is I want to put this in a case. The impressive case is going to be the dual screen. So even though this is mid-ranger hardware,
it comes with another example of a dual screen case, nicely iterated, little touches and improvements even over the V60. Feels a little bit better than the V60 dual screen. But on top of that, there are times where you're going to want to use a phone just as a phone. My V60 has lived in its dual screen case. I've actually had some issues finding a good standalone case for the V60. So I get this Velvet, and immediately I can put it in a design skin. And this design skin, it's just a nice hard plastic, black plastic shell with a green insert and then a wallet slot. So you can put in like a driver's license or a credit card. And it's got kind of like a faux reptile texture to it. And you can kind of hear it rattling on my mic. It's also got a hand strap. It's kind of like having a fancy pop socket built onto the back of the case, but it matches the green of the phone. You just kind of snap it in there and you've got a cradled phone that's really easy to handle, really easy to use. This completes the Velvet experience in a way where the V60 has actually been kind of difficult to pop out of this case and keep in something else. Like, there aren't a lot of manufacturers these days making really nice accessories. I can get any cheap plastic bumper case or something like that for the V60. I'm having a harder time finding stuff like this, this design skin, a nice hand strap. I mean, that's just so handy. So we're seriously looking at what phone to get for Marie next. She's using a G7. She's slowly killing that G7. It's just getting a little long in the tooth, but she's a power user in family productivity, but she's not a power user for things like gaming. We're looking at what might be a good fit. I really want to get her on 5G because of how bad the LTE reception is in our neck of the woods. Especially when we're at home, we get a substantially better 5G signal than we do LTE signal. Like in the Gadget Lab, I struggle to get a 4 megabit download on LTE, but I can get a 30 meg download on 5G. I want my wife caught up. And so I don't think a premium tier top of the line phone is really going to be a good fit. I think she'll miss a lot of the fun features of an LG. If we move her over to like a OnePlus 8, she'll be real sad to lose a headphone jack because she finally has a nice earbuds, and she uses my Vmoda. Okay, so they're talking about like my wife stealing things, my Vmoda crossfades. She got the boom mic, and so now she's using my headphones as like her headset because like the headset that her job gave her, not very nice. My Vmoda, much nicer. I miss those crossfades, but I've got other headphones to keep me company while she uses them. Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. So, when we start ticking all of those boxes, I want something that's not going to be at the top of the price tier.
I want something that's not going to be quite as chunky as a V60. I want something that's going to have 5G because my wife would actually benefit from that, especially when she's at home. And she's familiar with LG enough that it shouldn't be too hard of a transition. Keep coming back. Like, if the Velvet gets a decent US launch, and I have a case that she can immediately use and it looks nice. Like, you know, if she has to take a meeting and she walks into a conference room at her job and she pulls this case out, like, that looks the part. I mean, again, it's not fair, but if you're a dude bro in the video game industry and you know, throw an iPhone 8 with a busted case on the table, no big. But like, a woman in an executive position needs to put herself together in a different way. And even something as simple as like a nice phone in an accent and a case that complements like her Tumi purse, you know, like all of those things seem to matter a little bit more. Velvet seems like this might be our jam. Like, this might be the product that gets her to flip. Finally, I get my LG G7 back. Here, I've got some comments here coming in. Well, first of all, Mr. Pulp Fiction, have you been an actor, Juan? Hashtag Hollywood, hashtag Broadway. I have done a few projects, but mostly I was a casting director. So I was a commercial casting director for voiceover. I also did a little location sound work as a sound supervisor and a location sound mixer. You can see me on camera as the sound guy in the ABCs of Death, Q is for Quack, where I was hired to be the location sound mixer, but they needed an on-camera sound guy, and then they just used me while I was actually recording audio for the ABCs of Death. Let's see. Oh, LFA Reviews. The dual screen case in white is the one. It looks so good. Here, let me actually put it in the dual screen case while I go through some of these other comments. From ER1980. And I'm sorry, is it ER, IR, IAR? How do you want me to say your Twitch name? Oh, there's another firmware update. Okay. This update includes functional upgrades and speed enhancement on your dual screen. The upgrade will run in the background. Please note the following. Do not remove your dual screen. Okay, hold on. I'm going to push update on this and then read a few more comments. It always makes me nervous because, like, if you turn the screen off, it can mess up the firmware on an update. From ER1980, I saw your live unboxing with Flossie Carter's unboxing. Apparently, Flossie had already ordered one before he got his reviewer package. Vasicos 8, this is a great point. Limited editions usually go to the flagships. But again, right now, we're in this really awful territory for consumers. I don't want to tell my family and friends, like, you got to buy a $1,000 phone. If you want some notion of future-proofing 5G, you're mostly covering the basics, you want a good camera and the ability to stream good video. And I feel like you've got a good solution for that with Apple, with an iPhone 11. I have to believe there's going to be tiers of the iPhone 12. It's a little trickier. Like, I don't want to say, like, well, if you want to spend $200 less, you can get a year-old flagship. And maybe it's going to get good support. Maybe it won't. Samsung's doing a little better. Get a Galaxy S10. You should be fine. Probably. I just want something that kind of ticks all those boxes. That really you can hone in and kind of refine that choice. You know, Velvet is making an interesting argument here. And I'm putting together, I'm writing a script right now. And it's not like most powerful, but it's a comparison. Like, you could pick up a OnePlus 8 or you could pick up an LG Velvet, and we're in similar pricing territory. Nicer phones at that in 5G territory. But if you trade one feature for some other features, it might be a nicer experience. Or if you just want horsepower, you definitely want to side in this direction as opposed to getting this phone. That I think is a more important conversation. So if LG is looking at this new mid-range where, I mean, come on, this is as the mid-range, even like 3 years ago, this is what the most expensive phone would have cost, like in that $700 territory. There's nothing, you know, like in the hearts and minds of consumers, that's not mid-pack. $1,000 is extravagant. This is top of the line. And then in $400 is middle. It's only us techies that kind of moved the goalposts on pricing. Mr. Pulp Fiction, I'm wondering if LG Velvet's cameras are mid-range quality. I'm actually going to show a few photo samples directly from the phone here. So I'll let y'all decide on that. And see, and Steve, we have to start playing this game. Consumers aren't going to do this with us. Upper mid-range, lower mid-range, upper entry level, premium flagship, ultra premium flagship, folding phone price. You know, like we got to be just a bit more direct. 5G is jacking this up and it's hurting people's wallets. Like this stuff is getting rough. And especially again, someone like my wife, her phone, she's not going to walk around with $1,000 phone. She just won't. She can't. Like I've asked her, you know, like, do you want to test drive this phone? And she's like, oh, it's kind of nice. It's kind of like, well, how much does it cost? And you're like, it's $999. No, thank you. I mean, it's like big nope button and she's out. She's way more interested in the TCL because she used to love her Alcatel. And her Alcatel was a phone where you could replace the whole phone for less than replacing the screen if you ever broke it. That's her vibe. That's her lane. Here, let me scroll through some of these. Steve, Q3 Becker again. The 765 reminds me of the times LG shipped phones with the 808. And especially back in the 808 days, that was a better experience than shipping with the 810. Anyone can fight me on that, but for all of those issues with that generation of chipsets, the 808 was the right choice. Walt Samarista, if LG would produce a dual screen design on the Velvet for the V60, that would be nice. I'm hoping that what we see, because this is another little bit of improvement. Let's break down those improvements. I talked about this on the live stream on the unboxing, but using it completely reinforces my feeling that. So here's the dual screen. It's kind of hard for me to do. I don't have my other camera set up, or I'd cut to a second angle. This white slice in the middle is a little bit more obvious to see than having black where it kind of blends in with the bezels and stuff. But the hinges are nicer. There's a little bit more of a definite snap as it's closed. Like the tactile feedback of how you're using the case. These are super, super subtle things, but they're all just a little bit improved over the V60. The biggest improvement is the outside of this case. It is very worrying when you take a V60 out and the whole front face is glass. If this phone in the dual screen case takes a minor corner drop, you're going to shatter the front closed cover of the case. I don't think that's the most practical design. I don't think that's very good design. I think it's aesthetically pleasing because it hides the ticker display, like it's all like it just sort of appears when you've got a notification or a phone call. I'd much rather have something a bit more durable, a bit more scratch resistant. I mean, still, if your case takes a drop, you've got two screens to worry about. So it's probably not going to be ultra rugged, but this should be a bit more lifestyle durable, better hinges, more durable design. And then it just stands out. Green little bits of trim showing through on a bright white case. It's a sexy look. I mean, this looks really good. It doesn't look quite as dull and surfboardy black as the V60. Again, the hilariousness of this. My daughter, she's 4, thinks my V60 looks boring. Her words, that's boring. So she put a sticker on my V60. She thinks the Velvet looks pretty good. She doesn't need to put a sticker on the Velvet because the Velvet isn't boring like the V60 is. Out of the mouths of babes. Matt Tyler, does Marie still use those headphones that you got molded for her all the time? It was like a switch flipped. I mean, just so great. My wife has really funky, tiny little pixie ears. And she's never had earbuds that have fit properly. The folks at Mi Audio, helped us out with an ear scan and custom molds, and those are on her desk. She uses the my Vmoda as like a conference calling headset. Everything else, audio, is being done on those Mi Audio custom molds, and she very much enjoys having a phone that can power them decently with the G7, and you don't need the high impedance amp to power those earbuds well. So again, Velvet might not be a bad choice to move her over. Let's see. Was it Android Authority said using the case removes wireless charging capabilities? I wouldn't think that that would. Well, you know what? We can actually test that here in just a second. I'll break out. I don't keep a wireless charger running. I'm trying not to use wireless charging as much. But Root Knight 5 says he tested it, that Flossie tested it. We can also do a live demonstration here too. Matt Tyler, budget, lower mid-range, upper mid-range, flagship, upper flagship, done. But what about, you know, ultra premium? And what about entry level budget and mid-range budget and an upper budget? You know, like a $100 phone to a $200 phone. I need stratification. Mr. Pulp Fiction, replacing a shattered OLED edge display of the LG Velvet would be very expensive for Juan's wife. That is actually a good point. Again, I want her to test drive one of these, but the whole package is something where Velvet's going to tick more boxes than we have to cross out. Durability might be a concern. She might not like the curved edges on this phone. But again, I think that would also come down to having a decent case where I don't think my wife is going to dig on dual screen. I think she's going to be more interested in just the standalone phone experience. And if I can get an okay screen protector on the front of the Velvet and keep her using a case like this, where she's so much more likely to have a good handle on it, not as concerned. If it were V60 and I didn't have good case options, I would be much more concerned about Velvet. But again, having something like this helps the conversation so much when I'm looking at a phone for my wife. From Kyle Ruggles, can you use a glass screen protector on the Velvet in the case? And that I'm not confident will work well. Just from my very first experience with LG dual screen, the clearance is pretty tight. I feel like V60 helped move the needle on this, but there's not much clearance. There is barely perceptible edge of plastic separating. I mean, they're trying to make this feel as flush as possible, and that the edges of the case curve down to follow the taper of the phone. And then there's ever so, we're talking like a fraction of a millimeter of border, plastic border on the case screen, so that when you close it, they don't come in direct contact. I mean, you can't see this on my YouTube. I mean, on my Twitch stream here, but when you close it, that they don't directly come into contact. But I would imagine even a grain of sand might be enough to kind of squish in between the two screens. So I can't imagine a proper glass screen protector is going to work that well. But what I'm using on my V60, and you can kind of see, yeah, because I did a terrible job installing it on the second screen. You can see these little bubbles here where I had specks of dust. I'm using a clear plastic screen protector on my V60. I think if we went glass screen protector on the phone, like if we can get a good one, that's also an unknown for an LG, is getting a good accessory like a glass screen protector. But if I went screen protector on the phone and then plastic on the dual screen, that might be enough. Because again, I don't think my wife is going to use dual screen as much as I do. I'm using it a lot for gaming. And that's not something my wife is going to do a lot of. The most I think she would really want to use it for is for when she's streaming video, so she doesn't have to have, she's got this weird little desk phone stand that takes up more space than it really needs to. I think she would be interested in dual screen to stream video, but she wouldn't care
that much about dual screen. Zenith 224. Wait, Velvet has a curved main screen and a flat secondary. That is correct. The very edges come curved on the Velvet, and then the dual screen case, if I put this more in front of my face, is flat. So you can kind of see the curved edge right there, how it kind of tapers off on the side. But the dual screen case, the plastic actually bows to match the taper curve on the side. So when you close it, they all line up together. So there is no curved edge on the dual screen case for the Velvet. That is flat. From Walt, how would you describe the curved edges on the Velvet? Let me pop it back out of the case, because I also do want to show some of the UI and stuff. This is the South Korean model, so some of the widgets are a little different. Like I wish I could get that dual clock widget to work with with Nova Launcher. So I'm probably going to switch to Nova Launcher at some point. So in terms of design, you know, like I did the V60 versus OnePlus videos, and a major part of that, you know, like when I talk about aesthetics, the V60 is not a pretty phone. It's a diesel truck of a phone. And the OnePluses are really pretty this year. This feels like LG's take on Samsung meets OnePlus. You've got like kind of a Sony inspired hard rectangular flat top and bottom. Just a little bit of bezel kind of bordering the screen. So the screen does curve, but you can see there is that kind of black stripe bezel that gives you some little space. There's just like that fraction more dead space than on some of the other curved screen phones that I played with. But the edge, it's a really skinny rail on the sides of the phone. So again, just like I would say with a OnePlus, like a OnePlus 8, you're gonna use this phone in a case. You have to. I really cannot see a long life for any Velvet, OnePlus 8, a lot of the Samsung lineup, for using this device naked. I don't see it. I don't see how that can work. It's so thin at that edge where your fingers actually can hold it that I wish that they had just kind of completed the back, like made the back a little bit more squared off. So it's not that the glass curves here. That to me would have felt a little bit better in the hand. Again, I'm coming off of the Xperia 1 Mark II with totally flat sides and a flat screen. So that I would kind of wish, but I'm digging. It's another taller display. And here's what I think is kind of interesting is Velvet is the second generation of, or second iteration of LG trying to cut some costs. So V60, it's a good 1080p panel, but there's nothing super fancy about V60 screen. 1080p, good OLED. There's no high refresh rate mode, but they can mass produce this OLED so that they can match it perfectly in the dual screen case. I am almost positive that Velvet is using the same screen. And so because it's an OLED on the Velvet, they can make the Velvet feel a little skinnier by curving the edges, just like the OnePlus 8 does. And then they're still using the exact same screen in the dual screen case. Again, it's like every little bit that they can continue manufacturing, whittle down costs, normalize, make the experience more consistent. I think that's a smart play. So we're going to show off. Someone was asking about camera stuff. So I know WDC is in 10 minutes. We're still talking about the Velvet. Well, what are we doing, folks? WDC is in 10 minutes. I've got 10 minutes. Let me make sure this is connected, and then we'll go into screen share. There we go. So, I mean, the UI is LG's new UI. It's very Samsung-y. You know, it's going to drop, you know, software and icons and shortcuts down to the bottom of the screen. Oh, I can also show just what the settings. All of this is really well known. This all looks like it's directly out of what we saw from the V60. But someone was asking about the camera, And I think we're in solid competitive territory against, say, a OnePlus 8, a very similar camera sensor. I think it's exactly the same camera sensor. But if we open up the gallery, here, I'll turn it sideways. For Father's Day, my daughter, oh, I want to turn down volume because I'm not sure if there's any. She put on like a little show. She was like dancing and doing some fun stuff. She was super cute. But the overall, you know, photo experience, I'm doing fine. Like a little B. It does not have the ability to, it does not have the ability to rock 4K 60. It does top out at 4K 30 frames per second, but these shots, I'm feeling pretty good. LG's post-processing, the JPEGs seem a little bit sharper, and that they are kind of boosting the vibrance on their version of HDR, but I don't think they're doing it so destructively. Like, I don't look at these as overly vibrant as what you see from a Galaxy. Like, they're not boosted vibrant. It's just LG's trying to make these a little juicier, social media ready when you shoot with HDR. But I'm feeling real good. It's an example like this. This is a little uncharacteristic even for an LG HDR, where in the background, that light blue application doesn't quite vibe with the real blue of the sky. It's just that to expose properly for the rose kind of blew out the sky a little, and then the HDR is trying to replace some of that blue information. But this is, and Blue Malicious is starting to get some more natural bokeh too. So this is LG's first phone with that 48 megapixel image sensor, the true half inch image sensor. So in terms of things like optics and depth of field, this is an improvement over the G8s and V50s. LG didn't play that game last year with any of their phones. They were using the older 12 megapixel image sensors. So this is still an upgrade. If you're talking G8 for camera, camera fidelity, camera quality, and depth of field, this is still better than where we were last year with LG phones. Image stabilization is really good. They're not overcranking for 4K 60, but this is 4K 30. It looks really sharp. So I've been very impressed. And especially when you see stuff like, you know, white flower in direct sun with yellow center, and it's managing to retain all of this image detail. It's not completely murdering the highlights, and you're still getting some decent shadow detail in the backgrounds. Again, this is a punching above just a straight up mid-ranger experience. And then LG focusing, yeah. This is a little slower than the V60. So here I can like turn this around. Oh, it won't. All right, we'll do portrait. But, you know, face detection, super, super fast. Now it's not going to do it, but it's already focused on me. But let me see if I can. And you get that little focus indicator in the, there we go. You get the shutter button in the focus indicator. So handy. But I mean, like lining up a shot, especially the mirror finish on the back, where it's really easy to get a good reverse shot of me using the nice cameras. I'm happy. I still need to shoot more with it, especially low light. I need to play around with some more night and see how the night mode works on this. But all in all, the camera has been giving off great first impressions. I'm not expecting it to perform at V60 levels, but I feel like we're trading blows really well against a OnePlus 8. Let me just spoil part of that video. I'm going to do a OnePlus 8 versus LG Velvet. Do you want a Snapdragon 865? If you want a Snapdragon 865 and you want that horsepower, then yeah, I would walk away from the Velvet if you really feel like that's going to be a key aspect of how you use your phone. But we're talking rated water resistance. We're talking better camera software, similar camera hardware performance, like when we talk about the optics, the depth of field. But I like LG's photo processing better than OnePlus. I like OnePlus's video better than the Velvet's right now in my early usage. You've got a headphone jack, which sounds pretty good. I'm going to be doing some measuring and testing on that. Similar battery capacity and style. OnePlus is going to win for fast charging. OnePlus as a standalone phone is going to win for having a higher refresh rate 1080p display. But LG has stylus support and the ability to go dual screen. And in most markets, is going to sell with a dual screen case for the same price as a OnePlus 8 here in the United States. I'm going to be really curious to see how that plays out here in the United States. So that's a good fight. Do you want the more powerful car with fewer options, or do you want the less powerful engine with the better accessories? That's Velvet versus OnePlus 8, because now we're sort of on equal terms in consideration of things like 5G. So that's the gig. I mean, it's good times. Blue Malicious, did you hear Mr. Mobile on the Android Central podcast? He really wasn't enjoying the pro camera mode, seemed to think it was a bit overcomplicated, meant only for setup shots, maybe with a tripod. I mean, that's the whole point of having a manual option, though. When you take control over your content creation, you want those modes. And sometimes that means using a tripod. Mr. Mobile is an amazing storyteller, and I think he's always remained consistent in what he tests for. But he doesn't test for that kind of content creation, especially on mobile. And he has nice cameras, so he uses nice cameras. But it's kind of like, well, why don't you just use the selfie camera on your phone to shoot your videos? Because he has the equipment and the studio to properly make the videos that he wants to make. My argument would be, if you're used to auto HDR processing and you're in mixed light, you probably don't bother trying to take photos of fast moving pets or kids. But if you've got manual options, you can set your shutter speed. And it's okay if that photo's not as HDR juicy, because the phone isn't going to try and expose for the background. The phone is going to follow your input on the shutter speed, and I can freeze my daughter in action, you know, late into the evening. That's why you have those modes. To just say it's only one thing, that consumers only want to push the shutter button, is a bit reductive. So I totally appreciate there are folks who don't want to shoot full manual. I rarely shoot full manual. But I like having the ability to juice one setting and tell the phone, don't try and make this look pretty. I'm trying to freeze movement. Or don't try and do an overscan of this in a night mode. I'm trying to do a longer light streak exposure. Well, I need a tripod for that. You know, it's like, I want to be able to tell the phone, this is what I'm trying to do. And you can't do that unless you have manual options. So, we're a minute away. We're going to be stepping on WWDC, but I think it's the right time to wrap this up. I'm going to have a lot to say about Velvet. I've got OnePlus videos to wrap up, headphone videos to wrap up. I got a Peak Design tripod that's super sexy. We've got to talk about that. There's a lot coming to the channel, and I'm really excited for y'all to be on the ride, because this is fun. I'm having some fun. I'm enjoying this. And huge thank you to the folks at LG. 15 of those reviewer kits went out. So if you want to see LG getting a bit better about their presentation and their marketing, you can go check that out. But folks, we should probably flip this so we can go hit WWDC, which is starting right now. Thank you so much, as always, for the participation, for the sharing, the communication, not just for my show, but for all of these content creators that deserve more attention. The fact that we have a community of people out there that are game to tell that story and to share that story makes me really happy to be a part of these streams here. And I'll catch you all next week. Another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I want you to be awesome with your technology. I want you to do awesome with your technology. Stay safe out there, because things are still crazy. They are still crazy. We're trying to pretend that they're not, but they're still crazy. Stay safe. Be well. I love y'all. I'll catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.